How do you like the sound of a bank that's built for you, not the 1%? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, you should check out Chime. Chime isn't just another banking app. They unlock smarter banking for everyday people with products like MyPay, giving you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and getting paid up 2 days early with direct deposit. They also don't charge an overdraft or minimum balance fee, so you're in control of how you spend your money. In fact, there's no monthly fee at all. Instead of charging you to use your own money, Chime actually turns everyday spending into real rewards and progress. It's the new way to build credit history with your own money and get rewarded every single day. Plus, you can earn up to 3% APY on savings, which is 7 times higher than a traditional bank. Several of my mates have already switched to Chime for their everyday spending, and they say that they have never felt more in control of their money. Chime is not just smarter banking, it's the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/redhanded. That's chime.com/redhanded.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello.
Hello.
We're going to take a walk down, certainly memory lane for us, but if you are a youth, you probably will not remember.
Quite.
So we're going to invite you to cast your minds back into the depths of the internet to 2012. YouTube was in its golden era. Image sharing apps like Instagram were on the rise. I was sleeping with the captain of the rugby team, so no one could tell me nothing. And it was a simpler time. Online and in real life as well. If you were still in nappies, you can fuck off. But us millennials were at university, and my concerns were not really to do with the internet back then.
No, not at all. Mm-mm. Not at all.
No.
I was just wrapping up uni in 2012, and couldn't have been further from my mind, the internet.
No. But today's topic, I was aware. I saw the stickers. I had no idea, and I didn't care to, because I was busy with other things. But suddenly, in 2012, the West got a new mission, which was to make a Ugandan warlord go viral.
Would we say one of the earliest?
Absolutely.
Viral infections?
Totally, totally, totally.
To spread around the interwebs?
Yes, us in the West were convinced that it lay upon our shoulders and our thumbs to save the whole world.
Now, you probably remember Kony 2012 as a meme gathering dust at the back of your mind. But what was it actually all about? Well, the true story is even wilder than you might think. What started as your classic virtue signalling social justice campaign to topple a Ugandan warlord quickly imploded, becoming a dumpster fire of scam accusations, white saviour complexes, and almighty fake news. And an all-singing, all-dancing High School Musical-style video that was so cringeworthy it made Glee look like some sort of gritty HBO drama. Its squeaky clean founder's reputation was left in tatters, and we're still reckoning with the questions it raised about problematic online slacktivism. Right now in 2025. Hashtags at the ready. Let's dive in.
To understand what happened with Kony 2012, we need to understand Uganda first. And it has a particularly bloody history. As usual, it's Britain's fault. Prior to British colonisation in the 1860s, Uganda was separated into powerful kingdoms with well-structured societies, trade networks and political systems. Until we got there and ruined it. And we decided to divide it all up in different ways, as we so often like to do, and just sort of dole it out to people who had no business having it in the first place. Under this colonial system, southern regions, particularly the prosperous former kingdom of Buganda, got a better deal than those in the north. While power, commerce and trade were concentrated in the south, the Acholi people of northern Uganda were largely pushed into military roles. And then the Brits added fuel to the fire by inviting about 32,000 Indian nationals, also at the time part of the British Empire, famously, to build railways and manage businesses. And this created, as it usually does and has done all over the world, a racial hierarchy within the country, with the Brits at the top, Indians in the middle, and the native Ugandans right at the bottom. Uganda gained independence in 1962, but after that happened, things got very messy very quickly. Its first independent government, an alliance between politician Milton Obote and Bugandan king Kaboko Mutesa II, went up in flames, and by the late 60s, there was a military coup. Obote ditched his democratic ideals, abolished the country's kingdoms, and declared himself top dog. People were not particularly happy about this, and it was in this climate of political instability that notorious tyrant Idi Amin pulled off a military takeover in 1971, plunging Uganda into years of dictatorship and chaos. The country's 40,000-strong Indian population were sent into exile, and it also spelled bad news for the northern Acholi people as well. Targeting them for their military links to Milton Obote, Idi Amin ordered the execution of thousands of Acholi soldiers and civilians in brutal purges. Acholi land would bear the scars of this treatment for years to come.
Amin was finally ousted from power in 1979 during the Ugandan-Tanzania War. And there was a massive evil dictator boots to fill in his absence. Milton Obote was placed back in the hot seat, but not for long. During the 80s, a bloody civil war raged across Uganda, led by a guy called Yoweri Museveni and his insurgent troops, the National Resistance Army, or NRA. The rebellion, dubbed the Bush War, saw the deaths of countless civilians and sickening human rights violations on both sides of the conflict. Rebel leader Museveni took power in 1986, and has remained in charge ever since. But not everyone was too happy with Museveni at the helm. In Acholi land, an unlikely rebel force emerged, fronted by a formidable spiritual guru named Alice Lakwena. Lakwena, whose followers called her Mama Alice, started the Holy Spirit movement, known as HSM. And this was in 1986. Now, we know you're all thinking of High School Musical again, and weirdly enough, it's not the last time it'll come up in this episode. Because High School Musical, HSM, just in case anybody
I actually didn't connect those dots.
So there you go.
But thank you for illuminating it.
You're welcome. Now, Mama Alice claimed that she had divine powers and set forth a guerrilla army to fight against Museveni's regime. She told her soldiers that holy oil and stones would protect them from bullets. Which, surprise, surprise, they didn't. And it sounds very familiar to the story we did, of course, of the Haitian dictator, Papa Doc, who did something very, very similar against the Americans in Haiti. Well worth listening to that episode that we covered a while back on Red Handed. So yes, Mama Alice was full of shit. Still though, thousands of Acholi citizens threw themselves into battle at her command, before the resistance was crushed by the Ugandan army in 1987.
That's not where it ends, though. After the failed HSM insurgents, Alice Lakwena's distant cousin, a little guy called Joseph Kony, set his sights on a rebellion of his very own. And it seems like craziness ran in the family, because just like Mama Alice, former altar boy Kony also claimed to have mystical powers. You kind of have to.
You might as well.
He professed to be a spokesperson of God, possessed by 13 surprisingly multicultural spirits, including the ghost of an imaginary Chinese general named Ying Chu, who advised him on military matters.
Wow.
His ideology stemmed from a bizarre mix of Christian fundamentalism, mysticism, and a Acholi-centric nationalism, blending the Ten Commandments with local folkloric tradition, which in Africa is really not that rare.
Mm-hmm.
Kony began leading his Lord's Resistance Army, LRA, in the late 80s and initially preached the same goal as Mama Alice, to crush Museveni and restore Acholi pride after years of persecution.
But the LRA soldiers weren't your average cadets. They were children. As Acholi citizens grew disillusioned with Kony's increasingly batshit ideology, he didn't take rejection well.
What a surprise. Mm.
So instead, he started using the LRA to raid homes, massacre civilians, and round up any children who were left alive. Kony and his troops put machetes and machine guns in kids' hands, forcing them to murder their own parents before joining the LRA ranks as so-called freedom fighters. Young male recruits, usually aged between 10 and 14, but reportedly sometimes as young as 8 or 9, would be forced to serve as soldiers in Kony's bloody uprising. As for the girls, well, I'm sure it doesn't take much of an imagination to guess what happened to them. They were taken in as sex slaves for Kony and the LRA. Now you might be thinking, why choose kids? Why target the children? Well, Kony reportedly believed that their souls were purer. But reading between the lines, it's pretty obvious that they're just far easier to brainwash, groom, control. Also, once they've killed their parents, who have they got but you? There's no doubt that this would have been a far bigger part of his reasoning.
And you might be listening to this thinking, how is all of this allowed in the 21st century? And that's exactly what one bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young American filmmaker named Jason Russell thought when he took himself to Uganda in 2003. When he saw scores of Ugandan children sleeping on the streets in the city of Gulu, terrified of being abducted by the LRA in the night if they slept in their rural villages, Russell was appalled and vowed to make a difference. But charity work wasn't always the career that Jason Russell had in mind for himself. He wanted to be a star. He'd grown up deeply involved in the Christian Youth Theatre organisation that his parents co-founded. Christian Youth Theatre is in itself a hysterical thing that exists, but I also saw an all-white production of Hairspray at some high school in America.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, what? Instead of like, so there's a line in the Corny Collins, like, obviously the whole idea being that like, there are the white kids and there are the black kids and mm-hmm. the black kids only get one day a month where they're allowed to do the stuff. So it's like, nice white kids who lead the way is mm-hmm. the line.
Yeah.
And in this all white production, it was like, nice polite kids who lead the way.
Oh God.
Anyway,
at least they didn't black up.
No, I mean... That's true. That is true. That would have been much worse. But also just do another show. Like, why do you have to do Hairspray?
This is true.
Russell grew up in all white productions of Hairspray, I would imagine. And he said that he became a filmmaker because he wanted to make musicals. And he had to abandon this impossible dream because, quote, at the time, nobody was singing and dancing on television in the movies.
Fair enough.
Glee and High School Musical were not a thing yet. Theatre kids were at the bottom of the social pecking order. The band is below the theatre kids. Come on, anyway. Russell told his origin story at Liberty University in 2012. Vice President Johnny Moore joked that it was like, I can't do musicals, so let's do genocide. And he's not wrong. That's exactly what happened.
So Russell originally travelled to Central Africa in 2003 with some filmmaker pals, Bobby Bailey and Lauren Poole, inspired by the story of photojournalist Dan Eldon, who was beaten to death whilst trying to document the famine in Somalia in 1993. Russell admits that his goal was to capture a tragedy of some kind, though he didn't know what that would be yet. He and his merry men went to South Sudan, where they heard some batshit things were going down. But their caravan was attacked by LRA rebels at the border, forcing them to retreat to northern Uganda. And this diversion proved to be a defining moment for Jason Russell. Because here in Acholi land, he stumbled across the genocide of his dreams. Russell and his crew captured harrowing footage of the children in Gulu, developing a documentary that they called Invisible Children. And they shot this across the next few years. As the cameras rolled, a clear villain emerged. Joseph Kony. The film presented an irresistible narrative of a power-crazed warlord terrorizing children in the African bush, tugging more than a few heartstrings.
At first, Russell's efforts seemed to be doing some genuine good. After a screening of the documentary's rough cut in Washington, D.C., Congress approved discussion of the Acholi people's plight at the 2006 Human Rights Caucus. Russell launched an NGO charity called Invisible Children, dedicated to supporting vulnerable youth in northern Uganda and Central Africa. But the bulk of Invisible Children's activism was done on home turf in the US. Jason Russell toured high schools and colleges to raise awareness of the situation in Uganda. And you might be thinking, why would American teenagers need to know about that? But I think that's important. So far, I'm with him.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to be like skeptical of this kind of thing. But we also know that if these films aren't made, if these situations aren't brought to light, then how would anybody know what was really going on? And it has to be done in a way that's like, it can cut through the noise to the masses. Because if it's just like an article in the fucking Times, how many kids are going to read that, right? You have to speak to them in the way that makes sense to them. So, yeah. so far, so fine.
And Jason Russell thought that these shaggy-haired adolescents were the key to saving the world, one wristband at a time. Invisible Children's Whistle Stop Tour also brought an absolute travesty of a music video with it, in which Russell, Bailey and Poole sing and dance about the war in Uganda.
Okay, let's have a little listen.
We gotta do something.
Okay.
It's not great, but
it's not.
At least it's not. Thank God it's them instead of you.
Yes. You know? And this is the thing. Again, it's like, if you are going to cut through to children, I would say that's probably pandering and talking down to children, because children aren't as stupid as, you know, society likes to make them out to be. But I do think, I don't love it, but I'm not like offended by it.
No. Watch it yourself. Unoffensive, but very cringe.
Yes.
This time of year, as I'm running from recording to meeting to catching up with my friends, I am so thankful for my wardrobe staples. Those things I can reach for over and over without having to constantly think about what I'm going to wear. Those items that elevate pretty much every outfit. And those that work for me on those days when the weather just won't make up its mind. And honestly, that's why I love Quince. Quince is all about elevated essentials that feel effortless. Everything is designed to mix, layer, and last, so that you're building a timeless wardrobe instead of chasing trends. I'm definitely eyeing up one of their 100% organic cotton sweaters. Everything is built to hold up season after season. The stitching, the fit, the fabrics. These pieces are ones you'll reach for over and over. And the quality honestly speaks for itself. Quince works directly with safe, ethical factories, and cuts out the middleman, so you're not paying ridiculous brand markups. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/redhanded to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded.
Starting something new can be exciting, but also terrifying.
When we started Red Handed, we had no idea if anyone would actually want to listen to two mates who barely knew each other banging on about true crime for an hour. But nearly a decade later, I know in my heart and in my bum that we were totally right to believe in ourselves and launch that podcast from that weird kitchen, despite all of the horrifying fear. It also helps when you have a partner like Shopify on your side. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Gymshark and Mattel to those just getting started. You want people to learn about your brand? Shopify creates emails and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. It's like you've got a marketing team behind you, even if it's just you and your laptop, or maybe your cat. And if you get stuck, Shopify's always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. It's time to turn those what-ifs into today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/redhanded. Go to shopify.com/redhanded. That is shopify.com/redhanded.
And the lyrics are quite special as well. They are, "We are on a mission to put Uganda deep inside your mind. It needs attention and a dance to make it sparkle and shine." What?
Is it just him trying to rhyme things?
It seems that way.
Yes.
And we've had a little look at the comments below this video as of today, and here are some of the top brass. "This made me want to support Kony. Rumour has it, Joseph Kony dropped dead from cringe induced by this video. And finally, this video turned me into an African warlord."
Look, it is super cringe. It is super cringe. But maybe I'm looking at this right through the lens of somebody who is alive in this day and age and has become very angry and frustrated by, particularly within the true crime genre, of people who say that they want to help families and say that they want to help solve a case and insert themselves unnecessarily into something and cause active harm.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to obviously continue down this road with Jason Russell, but like, I don't feel like he's causing any harm right now.
No, I don't think so. And I do think he, at this stage, it's in the right place. His heart's in the right place. But the music video wasn't quite what the Invisible Children team were aiming for, and neither was its reception. But at the time, it was a part of their wholesome, somewhat naive, but still, mission to raise awareness of what was happening in Uganda in a way that would appeal to kids. Jason Russell even summarised the charity's aims as being to have fun while we end genocide. It's an adventure.
It's so tricky, isn't it? Because, and I might get rinsed for this, right? But whatever. I do think there is something quite insidious about telling children too much negativity about the world. I think people who like tell their children all about like things like, oh my God, the world's going to end, climate crisis. Like if we don't, I'm like, you are giving these children anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like the same as, you know, do you sit down if one of you lose your job and tell your kids, like, we don't know how we're going to pay the mortgage this month? You don't say that.
No, of course not.
Because kids need to be protected from certain things. And while I think it is important for children around the world to understand the plight of other people in the world, like what was going on in Uganda, I don't think it would have been as good if they'd have literally just been like, here's video footage of just like a bunch of children being forced to massacre their parents.
Mm.
That's going to create a generation of kids who are, and yes, you might be like, well, these Western privileged kids. Yes, of course they are. But like, it doesn't benefit anybody's society that they're all fucking traumatized and develop anxiety disorders because they see how scary the world is.
Mm.
And I get it. Some people might disagree with me, but that's what I think.
Yeah.
If I ever have kids, I'm not going to tell them all the scary things in the world. Age appropriateness, I think, is important.
Well, this is it. Like, they're going to get fucked by it eventually.
Exactly.
Like, let them have their years of like thinking that we're not all fucked.
That's what I mean. The question is, why was Jason Russell so determined to wake up the youth of America to the nichest of social justice causes? Because yes, it's very, very specific. Basically, he didn't feel confident that the usual routes like political lobbying and continuing NGO efforts on the ground were enough to fix the problem in Uganda. The US had already designated the LRA as a terrorist group after 9/11. And Obama even sent 100 advisors to the region in 2011 to provide strategic advice for the Ugandan military in their bids to locate and capture Kony. But the issue never really gained traction as a political priority. It was more like a tiny bug on the windscreen of international affairs than something worth pulling over for. And despite the efforts of Invisible Children, Joseph Kony had still not been arrested by the time 2012 rolled around. So Jason Russell decided that the only way to change that was by doing something huge. So naturally, he turned to the World Wide Web. Russell had one aim, to get everyone and their mother to know Joseph Kony's name. In his eyes, the only thing preventing Kony's capture and arrest was the fact that Western powers like the US just didn't know about him. And with enough online pressure, surely the net would close in on Kony and end his wicked warlord reign for good. And this goal neatly encapsulated the movement. Make Kony a household name, facilitate his capture, and then bring on the sunshine and rainbows in northern Uganda.
In March 2012, Invisible Children uploaded a YouTube video with the title Kony 2012. It was a 29-minute documentary revealing the situation in Uganda with Joseph Kony, urging viewers to help end the war by sharing the video to everybody that they'd ever met. And it's quite a slick production, focused quite a lot on Jason Russell and his own 5-year-old son, who's called Gavin.
Gavin.
I think Americans quite like that name.
Gavin.
Yep, Darcy's nephew's called Gavin.
No. Because I'm also like that. If this was like from the 80s, I'd be like, sure. But he's 5 years old in 2012. That means he was born in 2007. Okay.
I think sure. Americans don't mind it.
Okay.
But it is weird.
Okay.
Anyway, so in the video, Russell shows baby Gavin, 5-year-old Gavin, mid-sized Gavin, photos of their friend, Jacob, who is one of the children who's escaped the LRA child army, and Russell uses him as a poster boy. Then he tells his son about Joseph Kony, who he describes as the bad man, forcing kids to do unspeakable things as acts of war, and quite heavily leans on children like you, Gavin, just like you. The video shows Invisible Children's cause through the pure, unfiltered eyes of, admittedly, a white and blonde, but still child. And it couldn't be simpler in its rallying cry. Kony was the baddie and we were the goodies, and we could stop him doing all of his dastardly tricks and stuff. And even better, you didn't even have to book a plane ticket to Africa to end it all. All you needed to do was buy a $30 action kit, including a bracelet and posters to put up in your school. Or if you were too lazy slash broke to do that, you could just tweet a hashtag or change your profile pic.
The video urged viewers to target 20 so-called culture makers and 12 policy makers online by tweeting the ever-loving heck out of the Kony hashtags. On the list of these culture makers were celebs and billionaires, including Taylor Swift, Rihanna, Ellen DeGeneres, Justin Bieber, Ben Affleck, George Clooney, Oprah Winfrey, Bono, and Mark Zuckerberg.
Of course Bono was all over this.
He probably volunteered. I feel like the rest of them, like, didn't want to be inundated with these hashtags. And the policymakers included ex-presidents like George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and former secretaries of state Condoleezza Rice and John Kerry. The goal was to create an online tidal wave that would make it impossible for these influential figures to ignore the war in Uganda any longer. And it worked. Celebrities like Justin Bieber and the Kardashians shared their heartfelt support for the campaign, urging their huge fan bases to watch the Kony 2012 video. Hashtag Stop Kony and hashtag Kony 2012 trended for days, and the viral tsunami seemed tipped to spill over into the real world. It later emerged that Luis Moreno Ocampo, then the lead prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, had even liaised with Angelina Jolie and then hubby Brad Pitt about a potential honey trap, a plot to lure Kony out of hiding with a dinner invitation. Back home in the West, thousands of idealistic young Kony haters also signed up to participate in the campaign's planned Cover the Night initiative on the 20th of April, where kids would take to the streets and paste actual Kony 2012 posters over everything in sight.
Calling anyone to action on 420.
Yeah.
Is really stupid.
I mean, it's not the day I'm going to say people are going to be the most motivated for change. Maybe he thought the kids won't be high, but all the adults will, and they'll just let them get on with pasting everything everywhere. I don't know. But Jason Russell had achieved his goal. Finally, everyone was talking about Joseph Kony.
But then the tide turned. Rumours began to swirl in the cybersphere about the authenticity of the claims that Russell was making in the Kony 2012 video. It turned out that a lot of what Invisible Children were trying to suggest was going on in Uganda just wasn't true. Once upon a time, Kony had been the big bad wolf in northern Uganda, but he wasn't anymore. Kony hadn't even lived in Uganda since 2005, because he got exiled. He also wasn't dead, despite one viral video from a girl claiming that her African mum said everybody knew that Kony had kicked the bucket years ago. So he wasn't dead, but he was in exile and quite irrelevant by 2012. And while the LRA never disbanded, its numbers were nowhere near the 30,000 purported by Kony 2012. And that figure always referred to the number of child soldiers over a period of 20 plus years, rather than all of them at once, which was another misleading claim that the charity made very loudly. Journalist Susie Weiss summed it all up, saying Invisible Children had managed to recruit an army of children in America to disband a child army in Uganda that didn't really exist. Those Invisible Children, they didn't need saving from some warlord boogeyman. ActionAid's Arthur Lorak declared that while the campaign may well have been effective 6 or 10 years ago at the height of the LRA's reign of terror, priorities had since shifted to rebuilding and securing lives for children through education, sanitation and health.
Then there was the sticky matter of the video's rallying cry to stop the war. Because as expert voices pointed out, there was no civil war in Uganda anymore.
So embarrassing.
Yeah. Journalist Michael Wilkinson wrote that although it, quote, would be great to get rid of Kony as a matter of principle for his past crimes, it was unclear how millions of well-meaning but misinformed people were going to help deal with the far more complicated reality of the challenges post-war Uganda was actually facing in 2012. In its pursuit of a clean narrative, Kony 2012 ignored a troubling resource war over newly discovered oil fields. And let's not get started on how the campaign glossed over issues with the Ugandan military, which had been plagued with accusations of rape and war crimes on its own people for decades, in casting them as the good guys in a black and white morality war. I think this is the problem. Russell is grossly misinformed and amateurish in his understanding of the complexities of the challenges. In situations like this, it's rarely, like we talked about when we talked about what's going on in Sudan, when we talked about it on Under the Duvet. The reason it's so complicated is there isn't one good guy, one bad guy. It's like everyone's bad and the people fucking suffering are the people of that nation. And I just think it is a really complicated thing, especially when you're very young and idealistic, to cut through the noise and understand that sometimes. So, yes. Embarrassing, cringeworthy, misinformed, misguided, naive, amateurish, all the words that spring to mind.
And I think what's most disappointing is there's no attempt to check.
Yes.
He doesn't go back to Uganda. Like, he goes once and then decides a decade later that this is his moment. So, yes, Kony 2012, fundamentally flawed content-wise. But if you're feeling kind, you might argue that Russell and the Invisible Children charity meant well. But that, again, is not actually that simple.
This time of year, as I'm running from recording to meeting to catching up with my friends, I am so thankful for my wardrobe staples. Those things I can reach for over and over without having to constantly think about what I'm going to wear. Those items that elevate pretty much every outfit. And those that work for me on those days when the weather just won't make up its mind. And honestly, that's why I love Quince. Quince is all about elevated essentials that feel effortless. Everything is designed to mix, layer, and last, so that you're building a timeless wardrobe instead of chasing trends. I'm definitely eyeing up one of their 100% organic cotton sweaters. Everything is built to hold up season after season. The stitching, the fit, the fabrics, these pieces are ones you'll reach for over and over. And the quality honestly speaks for itself. Quince works directly with safe, ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're not paying ridiculous brand markups. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/redhanded to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded.
Starting something new can be exciting, but also terrifying. When we started Red Handed, we had no idea if anyone would actually want to listen to two mates who barely knew each other banging on about true crime for an hour. But nearly a decade later, I know in my heart and in my bum that we were totally right to believe in ourselves and launch that podcast from that weird kitchen, despite all of the horrifying fear. It also helps when you have a partner like Shopify on your side. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Gymshark and Mattel to those just getting started. You want people to learn about your brand? Shopify creates emails and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. It's like you've got a marketing team behind you, even if it's just you and your laptop, or maybe your cat. And if you get stuck, Shopify's always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. It's time to turn those what-ifs into today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/redhanded. Go to shopify.com/redhanded. That is shopify.com/redhanded.
Because sure, everyone who tweeted or bought a bracelet or whatever probably had good intentions. But it is just a bit white savior complex, isn't it?
It's such a tricky thing because I really don't want to cast this as a like anybody in the West trying to be aware of or raise awareness or help people who are not in the West is, oh, it's all white savior complex.
Yes, I agree.
It's all like, you know, modern day colonialism and blah, blah, blah. Like, I find that also offensive because then I think it speaks to this idea when people are like, well, you couldn't possibly understand because you're white. I'm like, well, actually, it completely undermines us as human beings who have the ability to empathize, who have the ability to feel something for somebody else. Like, what is the point of saying we need more stories about what's going on in other parts of the world? We need more diverse voices. Oh, but don't watch that video and then think that you understand what's really going on.
I totally agree.
Pick
I think
one.
We are in a very dangerous territory when I've had loads of people message me on Instagram being like, well, you've just gone to the University of TikTok. You don't know anything. And I'm like, yes, I do. And I think I'm very wary of this, like, well, you can't talk about that. I can talk about anything.
Yeah. And that's why I find that offensive. And it really does come back to this idea of like, you can't argue for a more united world, a more connected world, a world where more diverse voices are told, but then simultaneously say like, oh, women's voices should be heard, children's voices should be heard, people of color's voices should be heard, even though I hate that term. But then also be like, well, if you aren't any of those things, well, then you couldn't possibly understand. Because then it completely undermines a human's ability to understand and empathize and take that on. So no, I find that offensive, but I also can understand that that does exist. White savior complex can exist, but I think you can also kind of remove the white. I think like maybe a misunderstood savior complex from a place of oversimplicity and misunderstanding can exist.
Mm.
That's not as catchy as people just saying white savior complex, but like that can for sure exist. But is that always the case? And should everybody who wants to help somebody else in another part of the world be tarred with that brush? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking on YouTube, a Ugandan journalist called Rosebel Kagumaya, which...
It sounds like an alias for you.
I know, it's an anagram of my name, but with a K at the beginning. I was looking at that and I was like, that meme with all of like the algebra symbols.
Rosebel Kagumaya, that's what we'll call you.
Thank you.
When we eventually have to go hide.
It's not as good as Susie QAnon.
It will draw less attention.
Anyway. Rosebel called it another video where I see an outsider trying to be a hero, rescuing African children, and pointed out that local initiatives were better placed to intervene in the issues facing northern Uganda, noting the courageous efforts made by politician Betty Bagomi to draw out Kony from hiding. And I think this is, you know, the issue, if we're calling it white savior complex, what that actually is someone like Russell, who is, I am better than all of these people because I am Western and more evolved and I know and I understand and I fix it and then I'm the hero, I'm the savior, it's all about me. I think that's the difference between, like, that's a megalomaniac, whereas someone just talking about issues is not the same thing.
Yeah.
And I can take that on board. I think it's like, yeah, it's a challenge. And that whole, like, sort of helpless African narrative, and even big charities have been responsible for this and have now changed the way in which they approach this. For example, the Red Cross, etc., there would always be those adverts that would be like, here are children dying in Africa, flies around the face, flies around. That's real.
Mm-hmm.
But it was this narrative portraying of like, look how nobody here can solve anything.
Yes, yeah.
And we have to do it. And I get it. It's so, so tricky. Like, I'm really, this episode is maybe more nuanced than maybe the internet would make it seem. I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's that simple, but it's really, really tricky. And of course, like, this is taking a whole nother realm, but like, all of those situations in which, so as somebody who's come from like a different country, who's come from India, whenever I see cases in the news here of historic child abuse in particular, it always, my family and I will always say the same thing. It's so fucked. This happens everywhere. But imagine what is going on in countries where this isn't even talked about. Thank fuck that in the UK, in the US, in the West, even if these crimes are committed years ago, they eventually, some of the time, come to light. This wouldn't even happen in India. And it always makes me sad because there's a case I really want to cover of a woman called Kate Puzzi. But I'm struggling to because I cannot get enough resources on it. And if anybody out there listening to this episode has anything, knew anything about this, please get in touch, because it's a story of basically people who go over to help in different countries, say, you know, in a country in Africa, and they're working with children there. If they want to be predators, it is so much easier to get away with it because there is so much chaos. People aren't going to notice what you're doing, and they're just going to be so grateful for the help that those children are even more vulnerable. And basically, Kate Puzzi was one of these people that was helping there with all the best intentions. She finds out that one of the guys she's working with is raping the children in this school that they're volunteering in. And he kills her because she's threatening to expose him. So those things are absolutely real, and a very, very insidious way in which that happens, in which there is no good intent. There is only ill intent to exploit that situation. So it really exists on a spectrum, this kind of thing.
I think in this specific example, if Ugandans were telling their own story, they would have got the facts straight.
Yes, absolutely. And look, I don't take away from the people that are saying that. I will also say there is the challenge that sometimes an outsider coming in and telling that story can seem wrong, like knee-jerk can feel wrong. But also maybe sometimes an external person coming in is able, and I'm not saying in this case, I'm just saying in some cases, like take Sudan. Sometimes if you are Sudanese and you're a part of that culture, your loyalties will lie somewhere, right? Maybe it's with the people, which would be ideal, but maybe they're with one side or the other, one fraction or the other, and therefore you will leave out things that will make your side look bad. So maybe sometimes an external point of view that doesn't have that loyalty is a good person to tell that narrative. So I, you know, I get the points, but I'm also like, it's not never helpful. But in this case, it wasn't helpful.
Yes. What's far more troubling for Russell were the mounting claims that Kony 2012 and Invisible Children as a whole were actually just a front covering up a big fat scam.
And this is where any benefit of the doubts have gone out of the window.
Critics quickly turned their beady eyes on how the charity was spending its funds. And charities, my friends, are very good at this.
When will people learn?
If you think the CEO of Oxfam lives in a cardboard box on the M25, you are wrong.
Look at everything that happened with BLM.
Yeah, and what was it? Help for Heroes. That was the big one here, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're all fucking embezzling.
Yeah.
Anyway, not all of them. But Invisible Children is one of them. According to public records in 2011... Invisible Children spent 25% of its 8.8 million income on travel and filmmaking. And only 30% went towards programmes actually on the ground in Central Africa. And considering that Invisible Children raised $32 million through the Kony 2012 campaign alone, people were just starting to ask the very obvious and very fair question. Where were all those bracelet dollary-doos going?
The pressure was building for Jason Russell. His plan to go viral had worked, but not quite in the ways that he'd hoped for. Now the whole world was picking at his carcass, including speculating on his sexuality. All we'll say on this is that while Russell publicly professes to be straight, the theatre kid energy is palpable, but it's really fucking none of my business what his sexuality is.
No, and also, you know, it's like being a boy at pony club camp. Meat market. Being a theatre kid is very smart for boys. Pick of the litter, mate.
Quite. But regardless of what team he bats for, because like I said, nothing to do with us, Russell was starting to unravel in the weeks after Kony 2012 went viral. He had a very public meltdown in March that year, stripping naked and wandering the streets of San Diego while gesturing wildly and yelling at strangers. The footage was captured by TMZ and is still available on YouTube. Just to warn you, though, it does make for some pretty uncomfortable viewing. Rumours flew that Russell was masturbating and taking drugs, but it does seem that neither of those things were true. It was just a good old-fashioned naked meltdown.
That's so sad.
It is very, very sad. And this is the thing, it's like, it's so tricky because, yeah, some people will be like, he got what he deserved. I think in some ways also people like Russell, he didn't understand what the impact truly was going to be of going viral and then the scrutiny you are going to be under, which yes, absolutely is mismanaging charity funds, which is always going to get you kicked in the fucking dick, as it should. But yes, as people who for the past near decade have been subject to online scrutiny, nothing of this level, of course, but online scrutiny nonetheless, yeah, if you're already predisposed to not having a great time mentally, I can see why you end up having a naked meltdown. Now, Russell's wife claimed that this was due to a combination of extreme exhaustion and dehydration. I'm going to say that's probably not everything. I think that the intense media pressure from Kony 2012 was probably what pushed him over the edge.
Yeah.
Now, Russell, after this, was involuntarily hospitalized to treat his mental health and later told Oprah Winfrey that it took a fortnight for him to get back to his normal self, which if it only took a fortnight, that's doing pretty good. And Russell has said, we just did not see the tsunami coming, and it had knocked him off his feet.
Just a few short weeks after it hit the internet, the whole Kony campaign was dead as a dodo. In April, the Cover the Night event came and went with barely so much as a ripple, because everyone was smoking weed. Despite the thousands of sign-ups, only a handful of people actually showed up. Kony's face was not plastered on every street in America, as Jason Russell had hoped. But it was still lingering on the internet in meme form. Essentially, Russell was completely milked dry.
Yeah. So what happened next? Well, NPR, when they were still, you know, creating anything worth listening to, reported in 2014.
This American Life is a good show.
Okay, I'll give them that. I think the interview with their new CEO last year, who said something along the lines of truth is what I decide it is...
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. Is somewhat problematic. But anyway, this was 2014, and they reported that Invisible Children was drastically affected by the backlash, cutting its staffing by nearly half since its peak in 2012. Now, they do remain active today, with a thankfully fully clothed Jason Russell still at the helm, but have massively scaled back their operations both in the US and on the ground in Africa. And as for Kony, well, he's still out there somewhere. The latest reports have him hiding in South Sudan with his depleted child army. Local sources claim he is sickly from diabetes complications and doesn't have the same willingness to fight.
Kony 2012, for all of its foibles, was a turning point for our modern engagement with social justice movements. It was the first time that the internet truly mobilised social guilt on such a scale, pushing us into action in the form of clicks and shares. Reflecting on the whole mess in her op-ed for the Free Press, Susie Weiss wrote that Kony 2012 transformed our relationship with the internet from passive enjoyment to moral obligation. Now we were expected to be online combatants in a never-ending war on evil. The following years saw increasingly pointless online campaigns like the Ice Bucket Challenge in 2014, which was for motor neurone disease. I was working at a stroke charity at the time when that happened, and there would be whole days where the CEO was like, we have to come up with something like the Ice Bucket Challenge, but for stroke. And I was like, no one cares. Actually, there was a big push at that time to change it to brain attack, because stroke doesn't sound scary, but it is a brain attack. That's what it is. Yeah. But also because it mainly happens to old people.
Yeah.
No one cares that much.
Yeah.
Anyway, we never came up with some sort of Ice Bucket Challenge for stroke anyway. But it was a real thing. All the charities were trying to do it.
Yeah.
And whilst nowadays our attempt to virtue signal are less earnest, it is in the minutiae of online presences, what emojis we put in our bio, pass us on images, blah, blah, blah. Like Blackout Tuesday in 2020, where everyone posted black squares and it actually just made everything worse. None of us are immune. Is a human part to signal that we are good. But, you know, are you just doing it to make you feel better? It's tricky. And of course, there's something to be said about drawing attention to causes that you believe in and contributing to a safe space online that fosters tolerance. But I would argue that quite often people are doing it because they think that they should, like that fucking woman on TikTok who says that we owe Casey Anthony an apology.
Ugh.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Does online activism really make a difference? I think sometimes. I think awareness raising is an important thing. You will always get accused of virtue signaling, even if you are attempting to do things properly and you're informed and all of the right things. It's something that's very easy to fling. It's a hard one, but something that we'll just have to ponder for the rest of our lives, because it's not going anywhere, is it? But as for Kony 2012, disaster.
And I will end with just a little bit more nuance. I, on the whole, largely do not enjoy online activism and so-called social justice keyboard warriors, all of that. But I will also say this, in their defense, is that it is the prerogative of youth to be idealistic and to fight the good fight against the establishment. You've got your 30s and your 40s and the rest of your fucking life to be jaded and believe that you can't make a difference. So I do not wish for teenagers and people in their 20s to be less so inclined. And if we had had the internet when we were that age, you can bet your fucking ass we'd have been doing something just as crazy with it. So it just is what it is. It is your 20s to be fighting that fight. And they just so happen to have the internet, and that's why it's online. And that's why it can have more good and it can also have more bad. And there is also just more opportunities for people to be misinformed, etc. But it is just the way of the world.
Yeah, and I don't want to discourage people from saying what they think. It's a really important thing to...
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to have thoughts on things and say them. And I think that's dangerous as well. Because at the end of the day, like, there is like a big narrative of like, well, who are you to say that, blah, blah, blah.
Nah,
politicians are just people who say things. It's a very odd conceit to me that I've never managed to quite get my head around, but it's everywhere.
But on the flip side of people who would say that, of like, well, then, you know, I should be allowed to say these things, which I wholeheartedly agree, is then I do not believe in creating safe spaces. That's something I believe in, because I'm like, you don't have a right to not be psychologically challenged. You don't even have a right to not be emotionally or psychologically upset by something you've seen or something someone has said. So if you're going to go in and fight the good fight on behalf of the activism you believe, then... no one owes you a safe space.
No, I completely agree.
Physical violence is different, but words are not violence. Silence is not violence. Violence is violence.
I agree. So I was actually talking to a friend of mine. Basically, she went on a date with a guy and she didn't like something he said. It was about comedians, and like, essentially the argument was like, should there be things that are off limits in comedy? And I don't think so.
No.
You are well within your rights to never see that comedian again.
Yep.
Say you don't like it.
Yep.
But that does not entitle you to enforce a ban on what that comedian can make jokes about. Yes. You cannot like it. That's fine.
That's fine.
But
and you can tell all the world that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But that person has every right to say what they want. The world doesn't owe you emotional or psychological safety.
I agree.
So that's that, guys. I don't know. Go buy a wristband for something. I don't know. Whatever. Do what you want.
Save the pub.
Save the pub. That's mine and Hannah's new... community corporate outreach is save the pub.
Save the pub.
Because the pubs of the UK are dying and that's sad. But no, that's it. Go do what you want. Or don't do anything. That's also fine too. And we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You may remember deep in your mind cave, we once told you about a podcast, wasn't once, it was last year, called Wisecrack, from our good old buddy old pals over at Tenderfoot. Wisecrack is a really unique blend of stand-up comedy set and a shocking true crime case. Basically, a comedian describes the night he found himself at the centre of a double murder. Wisecrack has gone on to make Apple's best podcasts list, and that's full of people like us, so you know it's true. And it's nominated for iHeart and Ambi Awards this year. And it was The Guardian's podcast of the year. Top tier, number one, top spot. And now Wisecrack is heading on a true crime / comedy tour with comedian Ed Hedges performing his stand-up set live. And it's in a city that is maybe, very possibly, near you. Wisecrack's tour will hit Dublin and Manchester as well as London on Valentine's Day. And then it will head into the US for February and March. For dates and ticket info, visit wisecracklive.com. That's wisecracklive.com and search Wisecrack in your podcast app to listen to the show and see what all the noise and hype is about, my friend.